you give away land and there will be peace. It doesn't seem that anybody wants to learn from history. But Israel knows better, don't they? Let's go on to our next slide. Here's the real agenda. The real agenda, you see, the world says, Israel, you can have a two-state solution. And it'll be great, two states living side by side with one another. And my friends, that's the smokescreen, that's the fallacy, because in order to have two states living side by side with each other, one state has to recognize that the other state actually has the right to exist. But that's not where Hamas is coming from. In fact, this gentleman is holding up a copy of the Hamas Charter, this terrorist group, and in the preamble of it, before you get into it, the first article is, Israel will exist and continue to exist until Islam obliterates it, just as it obliterated others before it. Do you see that there's no room for a two-state solution negotiation in there? Let's go on now to the next slide. Here is, his name is Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah. He's the leader of the Hezbollah terrorist group in Lebanon. Let's see, does he want to live side by side with Israel for a two-state solution that the whole world says it'll work great? What does he say? Kill the Jews wherever you find them. Yeah, I think we may have a problem here. And you know what's particularly disturbing about his remarks? He's not simply saying kill the Jews in Israel. He's saying kill the Jews wherever they are on the face of this planet, which tells you, my friends, that this is not about occupation. This is a smokescreen. This is about anti-Semitism that goes all the way back to the book of Genesis, chapter 3, verse 15. Let's now go on to our next slide. Here's reality, everybody. This is what the other side wants. And let me tell you a little bit about this. Shortly before COVID hit, just as it was hitting here, Sandy and I were in Israel, and we had gone on an Israel tour, and we really weren't paying that much attention when COVID hit in 2020, because you're over in Israel. You don't care about the news going on so much in the United States, because you're touring the Holy Land, and you're going where Yeshua and his Talmidim were. And on the last day of our tour, on the 10th day of our tour, we were all supposed to go out and take our group to Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Museum. But as we're sitting in the hotel lobby, we all received a letter from the Israeli government, from our tour leaders and our bus operators saying, I'm sorry, all the holy sites are now closed. Israel is under a pandemic. We're now asking all tour groups to leave the country as soon as possible. On that last day, though, I had the opportunity. We weren't too far from the old city in Jerusalem. And I went into the old city, which has four quarters. There's an Armenian quarter, a Christian quarter, a Jewish quarter, and a Muslim quarter. Each one of them sell their various wares. You can be sure you won't find that in a Jewish quarter. I was actually in a Muslim quarter, and I saw that, and I said, I have to get it. And I have it at home in my house, because I wanted something tangible that basically tells the world, listen, this is their mindset. This is what they want. These are the Muslims. These are the Palestinians. In the shape, this wood carving, in the shape of what we know as Israel, do they want a two-state solution? Is there anything on that that says Israel is at all? No, it all says that they want to be called Palestine. There's no flag of Israel. There's a Palestinian flag. And under that, there's nothing about Israel but the design of the Arabic keffiyeh. We know what their agenda is. They don't hide it. They make it plain. And yet everybody says you can live in harmony and peace with them. This is the big smokescreen. Let's go on now. Let's talk about the second accusation against Israel, that Israel targets innocent civilians in its military response. How do we answer that, everybody? Well, there's a couple of ways. Let's go on to our next slide. One way is, here's the hard truth. Hamas intentionally puts innocent civilians in harm's way where they don't belong. Let me give you some examples. On to our next slide. And I was so thankful that I was able to find this. And I'm actually proud of France 24 publishing this story, because the news tends to be so anti-Israel. This was in May of 2014. France 24 says the Israeli army has repeatedly accused Palestinian militants of shooting from within densely populated civilian areas. And that is precisely the case. Rockets set up right next to buildings with a lot of residents. Do you see these are Hamas rockets and children right over there? And France 24 news media, this is not fake news, was brave and bold enough to say, we don't care what anybody has against Israel, we're going to publish the truth. And they need to be congratulated for doing that. Here's another one, on to our next slide, that Israel puts civilians in harm's way. Well, let me introduce you to this man. His name is Sami Abu Zuhri, and he's a spokesman for Hamas. Listen to what he says. Just so you know, when Israel announces that they're going to be launching an attack, they give you advance notice. They'll call you up on the phone and they say, listen, we're going to bomb that building that you're in because it's a Hamas installation. You need to get out. And then not only will they call you, but they'll drop leaflets from planes in the Arabic language saying, we're coming, get out. And yet the aftermath is so many innocent people die in those buildings. Why didn't they get out? They tried to, but somebody forced them back in. And it wasn't Israel, everybody. Let me show you. We in Hamas, he says, call upon our people to sacrifice themselves against Israeli warplanes. In other words, give up your lives, die in order to what? Protect your homes, which kind of doesn't make sense because if you die, you don't need your house anymore. Accordingly, he says, Palestinians created a human shield against the Zionist bombing machine, as if to say to the Zionist enemy, we desire death as you desire life. Why are innocent Palestinian civilians getting killed when Israel responds with attacks? Israel tells them to get out. Hamas says, get back in. And in fact, they do. Let's go on to our next slide. Let me show you something, a composite, if you will, report from I4 News in the UK, but also the New York Times. I saw some of you taking photos of this, you know, of some of the slides on your cell phone. I'm glad you're doing it. Take this one, because you'll never see something like this again where the New York Times actually got something right. Sorry, I have to say it. Israel warns Gaza targets by phone and leaflet. This is July of 2014. On the same day as Mr. Abu Zuhri broadcast Hamas message, a Palestinian man got a call warning that his Gaza house was about to be hit by the IDF. The caller told everyone to leave as the house was to be bombed. But instead of doing that, the Palestinian man says, I invited neighbors to come and form a human shield. Some of them went up to the roof. Seven people died in the attack. The Israelis have used telephone calls and leaflets for years to reduce civilian casualties and avoid charges of indiscriminate killings, but people died anyway. Why? Because they ignored or defied the warnings. This is correct. This is accurate. And the New York Times is reporting it. They got this one right. But now you know how to respond. Let's now go on to our next slide. Another reason why innocent civilians are getting killed? Well, maybe because some civilian casualties never really happened in the first place. But see, the media doesn't tell you that. Let's give you a couple of examples. On to our next slide here. This is from Fox News, and on the top it says, don't be fooled. This comes from November 2012. Fox News reported Hamas stages fake deaths and scenes of severely injured people right in front of TV crews. Fake. The BBC showed a man being carried off by four others, seemingly the victim of an Israeli missile strike, only to reappear in the same clip a few seconds later, wandering around completely unharmed. The BBC also retweeted a photo of the dead body of a young girl on a stretcher in Gaza with the headline, heartbreaking, only for it to come out that the girl had been killed 3 weeks earlier in Syria, where Israel is not. Here's the next one. Look at this. Here's the claim. This image is of Palestinian children in the Gaza Strip killed by Israeli attacks. Here's the truth. This image is of Syrian children killed in chemical weapons attacks by the Syrian government. But when this photo got out, it was used by the terrorist group Hamas as propaganda to say, look what Israel did, and the world blindly believes it, and they don't ask because they don't care. Next one. Here's the claim. Another don't be fooled. This Palestinian girl named Malik from the Gaza died in a May 14th Israeli attack on the Gaza Strip. Got people very upset. This poor, precious girl, look how beautiful she is, and Israel killed her. And then until the truth came out, the girl is Russian. She's not Palestinian. Her name is not Malik. It's Sophie. She lives in Moscow. She doesn't live in Gaza. And this photo, which supposedly has her dead, was actually taken at the Moscow Zoo on May the 16th, 2 days after her purported death in Israel, from an Israeli attack 1,700 miles away, of which she was never anywhere near in the first place. Israeli tour guides and officials will tell you that the Hamas and the Arabs basically have propaganda down to a science, and Israel is lacking in that. They themselves admit it. Let's go on now to our next slide. And of course, what happens as a result of these false reports? Anti-Israel protests in the United States. Stop killing children, end the occupation now. Both lies, but people believe the lies that they're told in the media. Let's go on now to our next slide. This is interesting too. This is a tweet after these reports came out from the actor Mark Ruffalo. And he began his tweet. He said, after hearing all this, he said he became anti-Israel. He said, over 30 children killed, mothers dead, hundreds injured. We are on the brink of a full-scale war. Sanctions on South Africa help free its black people. It's time for sanctions on Israel to free Palestinians. Join the call. Now, here's what you need to know. After he tweeted this, one of his friends basically had a talk with him and said, Mark, listen, you're buying the propaganda. You don't know the whole story. Here are the facts. And when Mark Ruffalo learned the facts and learned the truth, he said, wow, I made a big mistake. I need to go update my tweet and apologize. That's exactly what he did. Let me show you. It was only about a week or so later. I have reflected and wanted to apologize for posts during the recent Israel-Hamas fighting that suggested Israel was committing genocide. It's not accurate. It's inflammatory and it's disrespectful. And it's being used to justify anti-Semitism here and abroad. Now is the time to avoid hyperbole. Good for him. He got it. He did the right thing. But the problem, my friends, is there are so many people out there who only tweet the first thing and they don't have somebody else to come to them to say, here are the facts so that you know the truth. And that's part of why you're learning this today, so that you can be equipped to help out many of those you've come in contact with who only believe the bias and the propaganda. On to our next slide. Third accusation against Israel. Israel is an apartheid state. Half the people who say this don't even know what the word apartheid means. So why don't we find out? Apartheid, on our next slide, it's a policy or system of segregation or discrimination on the grounds of race. You're not equal because you're a different color, whatever it is. Israel is supposedly guilty of that. But here are the facts. Here's our next slide. Fact number one, guys, 20% of Israel's population is Palestinian. And get a load of this. Discrimination against them? I don't think so. A Harvard study found that 80% of those Palestinians who live in Israel say they'd rather live in Israel than even live in the Arab countries where they were born. Fact number three, one of Israel's Supreme Court justices is a Palestinian. And fact number four, of course, as you saw from Mansour Abbas, Israel now has a Palestinian in the highest levels of government. On to our next slide now. Israel's military response against its enemies is disproportionate. Here's the response to that, my friends. It is, well, duh. Of course it's disproportionate. This is war. Victory in a war requires a superior military advantage. Look, let me give you military statistics 101. Okay, here it is. If you have two different sides and they're at war with each other, okay, one of the sides has to be stronger in order to win. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, but that's how it works. Israel has a superior military advantage. My God, thank you so much, Lord. Because if they were tied, this thing would go on forever and ever, and the thousands of bombs and rockets that we're receiving now would turn into 10,000 because nobody ever wins. On to our next slide now. So what was this latest conflict back in May between Israel and Hamas all about? Sure, anti-Semitism is also involved, but even more so, a political power grab. And it had a lot to do with voters and elections. Let me explain. Here in our next slide, this gentleman is the president of the Palestinian Authority. His name is Mahmoud Abbas. This past April, it was time for the elections to come up once again, and Mahmoud Abbas wanted to be reelected, but he was checking the polls and he said, you know, this is not good. If we hold the elections right now, I'm going to lose. But how do I make sure I win? Ah, easy. I'll cancel the elections until my support goes back up. And that's exactly what he did. Who is challenging him? Take a look on our next slide. This party, Hamas. So you've got Hamas and the Palestinian Authority. So right now, Both of these sides are trying to get their support up so that they will be voted in. How do you increase your support in the Palestinian territories to make sure you're the victor? It's easy. Anytime anything good happens, you take credit for it. Anytime anything bad happens, you blame it on Israel. And so that's the reason why you had a month later in May this back and forth with the bombs and rockets, and why Hamas initiated rocket attacks against Israel, against innocent people for no reason at all. Well, Hamas was just campaigning for votes, folks. And that's really what it boiled down to. On to our next slide. And of course, ever since then, by the way, there's been a quote-unquote ceasefire. Let me give you the definition of a ceasefire in the Middle East. Here's the definition of a ceasefire. Israel ceases and the enemy continues to fire. Thank you very much. And that's what this is. Even during the ceasefire, by the way, Israel strikes Hamas side in Gaza over fire balloons. Hamas is sending up these balloons. The wind blows the balloons over into the Holy Land of Israel. The balloons come down. There are explosions. They're combustible, whatever it is, flammable, and they burn up the fields. On to our next slide now. Now, some interesting things have been going on, one in June and another in August. In June, President Biden and Israeli President Rivlin met at the White House. Biden said, "Iran will never get a nuclear weapon on my watch." This comes as Iran restricts UN nuclear inspectors' access to its uranium enrichment plant. Iran's new president, Ibrahim Raisi, is refusing to meet with Biden or even negotiate Iran's missile program. Biden was expected to meet with Naftali Bennett in June, but he actually met with Naftali Bennett at the end of August. Both of them agreed. President Biden said to Naftali Bennett, "Look, I stand with you. Iran is not going to be getting a nuclear weapon." It's good that they stand on that. Here's something you need to pray about. They're still on opposite sides of the poll when it comes to the idea of a two-state solution and Israeli settlements. Bennett does not want two states. Biden thinks it's the only way for there to be peace. Bennett wants continued construction of Israeli settlements on what we understand as Israel's land. Biden is saying, don't do that. You'll inflame the tensions of the Palestinians, and that will work against peace talks and a two-state solution. So that's where we are right now. Let's go on now in our slide, and let me tell you about these two folks. About 7 or 8 years ago, I had the opportunity to speak at the governor's prayer breakfast in Helena, Montana. And as I was there beforehand, we had state officials coming from all over. I had a woman come over to me. She said, "Rabbi Jack," she said, "you're going to be talking about Israel." I said, "Yes." She said, "I just want to let you know there were protesters outside." I said, "Really?" She said, "Uh-huh." I said, "That's pretty cool." Because, I mean, look, I'm just Jack Zimmerman from Phoenix. I'm Sandy's husband. I'm Jordan. I'm Ryan and Casey's dad. I'm Abby's grandpa and another one on the way. I'm just the guy. I've never had protesters before. You know? And then she said, "There are protesters outside." I said, "Well, I'm going to go outside and see them." She said, "No, Jack, don't do that." I said, "Don't worry. It's okay. I'm from New York." So I took out my cell phone and said, "Protester." And so I go outside and there's this massive group of protesters waiting for me. Two people. Look, you got to start somewhere, okay? So I go outside and I see these two and I say to the guy, I'm looking at his sign. His sign says, "Christ is peace." I said, at first I asked them, "Could I take your photo?" They said, "Oh yes, thank you." I'm like, "Yeah, massive, evil protesters." So I said, his sign says, "Christ is peace." I said, "I like your sign." He said, "Well, thank you very much." And then I looked at the lady wearing the kerchief and her sign says, "Free Palestine." I said, "I don't like your sign as much as his." And I said, "Why are you holding up that sign?" And she came up with like every objection that I just shared with all of you. Israel is an apartheid state, and they're occupying, they're doing this and this and this, and military, the whole nine yards. And what I did was, over the next few minutes, I kind of went through history with her. And first thing I said was, "Do you read the Bible?" And I already knew what the answer was, and of course it was no. And I said, "Well, let's talk history." I said, "Have you heard of the Nebi Musa riots, the United Nations in 1947, this and this, and have you heard of any of those things?" And I kind of went through a list. And after I asked her each one, do you know about this? Do you know about this? Every single answer from her consistently was, I don't know. Or I've never heard of it. I don't know. I've never heard of these things. I said, thank you, because you've given me honest answers. But don't you think you should get yourself educated on this issue before you go outside a college or a university holding up these signs? And listen, this happened in Helena, Montana, but it could happen, and it is happening everywhere. People are holding up these signs and sending these kinds of messages, and they are telling, just like she told me, she basically said, I don't know what I'm talking about. They don't know what they're talking about. They only believe what the media tells them. And so I'm hoping this morning that maybe I've given you a little bit of, call it ammunition, if you will, so that the next time that you have to deal with people like this, you'll not only know how to respond to them so that they can be greater convicted, but maybe you'll have greater conviction yourself in believing God's righteous stand and plan for the land and the nation of Israel. That's one reason why, of course, as believers, we are so close to Israel. And one of the most wonderful reasons as to why I'm a part of Jewish Voice Ministries International. It's not just sharing the good news with Jewish people. It's also the fact that we support more than 36 organizations that are on the ground in Israel. Those include Messianic congregations, humanitarian organizations, providing financial assistance, food, and medical care. And yes, listen, here's what you need to know. Are there organizations out there that support Israel and want to help bring Jewish people back into the Holy Land, bring them home? Yes. Does that automatically mean that those organizations promote the pronouncement of the gospel? Surprisingly, no. So just because you're giving to an organization that supports Israel and wants Jewish people to come home doesn't mean that they themselves actually believe in Yeshua, nor do they want the Jewish people they're serving to know about him. Keep that in mind. Thoroughly check these organizations out. Let's go on, though, to our next slide, and I'll give you a little bit of history. The gentleman on the left, his name was Lewis Kaplan, his wife on the right, Kira Kaplan, and they were the ones who founded Jewish Voice Ministries in 1967, because during that time, if you, let's say, turned on your TV on a Sunday morning, you would hear great preachers from the pulpit preaching the message of salvation, but they were preaching what was called the Roman Road, a New Testament plan of salvation. But that plan didn't resound with Jewish people. Jewish people weren't coming to Yeshua because that New Testament language and that plan was very, very foreign to them. And so at around this time, Lewis, a Jewish man himself who came to Yeshua, basically counted and said, you know, if we can bring Gentiles into the kingdom through what's called the Roman Road, maybe we can bring Jews into the kingdom under what's called the Kosher Road. And so that's essentially what the ministry did because, you know, Paul tells Timothy, he says, there's a place where Paul tells Timothy, Timothy, you came to the knowledge of the kingdom through the scriptures. Well, the only scriptures available at that time was the Tanakh. So obviously you can lead someone to Yeshua through the Tanakh. Imagine that. What a crazy thought. And that's what we've been doing since 1967. And one of the ways that we've been doing it, of course, is with a TV show that airs around the world, magazines, things that we've held festivals of music and dance. And as of late, let's go on to our next slide. Here's Jonathan Burness some years ago overseas, just putting his hand, praying for people. We have found Jewish people all over the planet. And that's not a surprise because, you know, in Ezekiel 22:15, God said, I will scatter you among the nations. And some of those nations are nations where you least expect a Jewish person to be. Let's go on. Here are some of the other areas that we're involved with. Our television show, you'll see a snapshot from there. The picture in the middle, I believe, is from Minsk, a dance festival. The Miracle of Israel was a DVD that we came out with some years ago, which talked about God's plan for Israel. And it was also one of the last projects of the narrator, because a few months later, he passed on. You might have heard of him. The guy who narrated this for us was a wonderful man by the name of Leonard Nimoy, who played Spock on the original Star Trek. On to our next slide now. Here is where the Jewish people are. believe it or not, Ethiopia. God says in the book of Isaiah, he said, I will bring them back from Babylon, from Hamath, from the distant coastlands, and from Cush. He's bringing Jewish people back from Cush, and Cush is the ancient name for Ethiopia. And I said, wait a minute. In order for God to bring them back to Israel from Cush, I guess they've got to be in Cush in the first place. Isn't that usually the way it works? And so they're there to this day, and many of these people in Ethiopia and also Zimbabwe and India, where my wife has been with me as well, these are some of the poorest people on the planet. They die from things we take an aspirin to remedy. And so we go to these countries and we have a medical missions outreach clinic, and we bring with us doctors and dentists and people from the medical field. Let me give you an example of this area. Here it is, ladies and gentlemen. This is a typical hut in Ethiopia. This is where and how people live, very, very simply. They live out in the bush. Many of them have never seen a doctor in their lives. On to our next slide now. There's just some of the conditions. This is outside the front door, if you will, of someone's house. You go in and there's no carpet, there's no tile, it's a floor of dirt. On now to our next slide, as I want to show you some of the scenes from our medical clinic and some of the conditions that people come in with. There's on the bottom right a person in a wheelchair. They didn't have it, it was provided for them. The person, this foot on the bottom left, suffering, believe it or not, from a condition called elephantitis. It sounds funny, but it's not. And we haven't had that here in a long time. But diseases that have been conquered in the United States for 100 years are still prevalent in countries like these. We can go on to our next slide now. This is a man who obviously came with a walker. He has hardly anything on his feet, but people come from hundreds of miles away to simply walk and stand in line to get into this clinic to receive free medical care. On to our next slide now. And here on our next slide, this is a facility where we had one of our clinics. It was given to us to use for that week. It's a five-day clinic just north of Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. That building has four different floors, and each floor is a different department. One might be eye care, the other might be dental, etc. The tent is the triage tent where people go so that nurses can assess for them what they're suffering from and which one of those floors they need to go to receive medical care. On to our next slide. Here in our next slide, these people are waiting just outside the dental clinic. You could see the man down there basically holding himself by the mouth. He was in great pain. And when they go in, let's go on to our next slide now. Here's a shot of one of the, if you will, dental offices. There's one of our Ethiopian dentists, Hermias, working on a patient. He has a dental assistant with him. This, by the way, this photo, And this particular arrangement is very, very special for Sandy and I. In 2009, our daughter Casey came with us on a medical clinic to Gondar, Ethiopia. And Sandy was working with the kids. She said, I want to work in the kids, just be with the children. And she was with the children. And our daughter Casey said, well, Mom, I'm going to kind of go and explore and maybe see where I should work. And so our daughter was gone for a good couple of hours. And I'm not exactly sure whether I went to see her or whether the dentist who was with her came back to where we were, and his name was Art, and he said, I just want to let you know, your daughter has been with me in the dental tent all these hours. I said, well, that's great. I hope she's observing and learning a lot. He said, well, she's learning a lot, but she's not just observing. She just extracted three teeth from a person. I'm, what? And then the next day, she was doing root canals. And I'm like, this is our daughter who doesn't even clean up her room. I mean, Anyway, long story short, from that experience, she began going on more and more of these dental clinics to where she is a full certified licensed dental hygienist today. And so is her husband, our son-in-law. And it all happened here. Changes lives, everybody. It's incredible. On now to our next slide. Here on our next slide, this is our eye care area. We give people eye tests. If we're able to provide them in some cases with prescription glasses, we can. Many of these people are receiving reading glasses. Some of them have never seen reading glasses in their lives, and from birth, their vision has been blurred. And now here they are sometimes in their 50s or 60s where they can see clearly for the very first time in their lives. On to our next slide. Here in our next slide, after these people are treated, guess what? We give them a prescription slip, and we say, take it to the pharmacy. which is a really tough place to find in Ethiopia unless you're on one of our medical clinics, because then it's right there on the grounds. Can you imagine? I mean, we have people coming up to this window and it's right there on the clinic. Okay, let me see. 10 milligrams of Imitrex. Okay, Motrin, this and this. Boom, here you go, right then and there. Virtually any medication you can get in the United States, we bring over there. It's a pharmacy on site. On to our next slide, and this one is one of my favorites. So this is our prayer room. After these people receive these medical treatments and care, they often ask us, why do you do this for us? You don't even know who we are. You've come from the other side of the world. What do you want? And it's a legitimate question. We give them a very legitimate answer. We say, we do this for you because the God we believe in tells us to do this for you so that you will know that he is the true God and he loves you and wants to make you better. Many of these people have never heard of a God like this before. And so they say, where can I find out more about this God? And we say, you can come into our prayer room or our prayer tent. We'll pray for you to be healed and we will share with you the good news of this God. This is a woman who we prayed for. There's our Ethiopian team and an interpreter. And why is she looking toward heaven? Not only has she been prayed that she would be healed and restored physically, but she has just accepted Yeshua right then and there. And there's the shot, everybody. And that's what it's all about. The last slide, though, that I want to show you, it's the very last slide. I want to end with this slide, and I'll explain why. Matthew 24, the Olivet Discourse, is where Yeshua talks about the signs of the ends of the end of the age. And we're living in those signs right now. He told us there would be wars and rumors of wars, kingdom against kingdom, earthquakes, etc., famines. And by the way, he also says in Matthew 24, 7, there would be pestilences. The definition of a pestilence is a virulent epidemic or pandemic that affects a mass number of people. We're going through those times now. And we're also in these times. I believe we're very, very close, like we've never been before. And until recently, I didn't say that. You know, Sandy would ask me over the years, do you think it's close? Do you think we, you know, can he come any day? And I said, honey, things aren't that bad yet. I still think we got a lot of time. I don't say that anymore. And I actually spoke to, last week I was in Canada, and I met with a pastor up there. And he and I were talking about this. And he said, Jack, you know, he said, I've got to tell you, I used to say to my wife, I think we got a lot of time, but now I tell her, I don't think we got a lot of time anymore. I said, are you married to Sandy? I mean, but he said the same thing. We don't have a lot of time. We're out of time. Look what it says here. This good news of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. So let me explain what this means. The end is coming. We won't have a lot of time. When Yeshua returns, and that will be quick, here's what has to happen first. The good news has to be proclaimed to all of the nations. When it says nations, the Greek word there is ethnos. And it doesn't just mean, okay, we're in Ethiopia for a day and a half. You know, we had a bullhorn, we preached it, now let's go to another country. It's not that. When it says all nations, it means every single possible ethnic group. That's where ethnos comes from. Within all of those nations. That's our heartbeat. And we'd ask that you be in prayer with us on that. And that's something else that you could pray for Jerusalem. Jonathan Bernison, Jewish Voice Ministries, has a 10-year vision to reach the remaining lost tribes. Actually, they're not really lost. God knows where they are. Thank you very much. But you know what I mean. The remaining lost tribes in 10 years so that we can say that we have done our part to fulfill and carry out Matthew chapter 24, verse 14. Would you be with me now as I close our time in prayer? Avinu Malkeinu, our precious Father and our King, yes, we learned an awful lot today. But more than that, Lord, take, please, in us and in our hearts what we have learned and help us, Lord, to use it to further the growth of your kingdom and to bring people into relationship with you. Lord, now that we are past the time of Rosh Hashanah, and we're looking at Sukkot, and we see that the bridegroom did not come back for the bride that's Rosh Hashanah. Lord, we're thankful for any time that indeed we do have left, but we ask that you would help us use it to spread the gospel and to glorify you in the precious and holy name of Yeshua. And everyone agreed and said, amen. Shabbat shalom. God bless you, everyone. to you. Thank you so much.
What a blessing.
Were we blessed by Rabbi Jack today? Hallelujah. You know, this is a message that needs to get out. This is people talk about Israel and the problems and these are the answers that we need to have. You know, I say you should go and like and share, and we don't always get a lot of likes and shares. This is a message that needs to be liked and shared. Share it on Facebook, share it on YouTube, share it on both. Go to our website. Just, you know, go home and share it, because people need to hear this message of what's going on in Israel. Amen. Amen. Thank you. So we're going to take up an offering for Jewish Voice Ministry International right now.